Pleasure to thank the organizers for putting up this conference, well, this workshop, where I'm learning a lot, and the topic we shall address will be a topic in which there are so many degrees of freedom interacting in such a smooth way that a minted limit is appropriate. This is actually the basic idea which Professor Glassy mentioned to some extent on the origin of the Vlasov equation. Now, the question we shall address is, to what extent does the Minfield limit reflect what happens in the actual physical system, which involves only a large but finite number of degrees of freedom, and to what extent, therefore, does chaos either make life easier or more complicated? To what extent does it enhance or wipe away effects of finite n, or what we call granularity effects? This work is the result of a long collaboration with Dominique Escamp and several other people. And in order to make very clear the importance of mean field limit, we decided not to work, although we're in plasma physics, with Vlasov Maxwell or Vlasov Coulomb equations, but with particles interacting with a Lipschitz field. So our basic system is a reduction of the initial many-body Coulomb interacting system, and this reduction applies in such a way that particles only feel a smooth force due to wave propagating at their own phase velocity, theta dot over k, whereas the waves, which you would possibly think of as supported by a background plasma, really behave like harmonic oscillators, their eigenfrequencies being some omega naught, and their complex envelope, after putting yourself in the right slow variable picture, has a right-hand side which is given by the particle distribution. Now, this simplified interaction model is Hamiltonian, and therefore it has two obvious conservation laws: total energy, which is just the Hamiltonian, and because this is translationally invariant, also total momentum, particles contributing with their velocity pr, and waves contributing through their pointing vector, if you want to think of them so, proportional to their energy. Why do I say that this model is very smooth and mean field-like? Because the force on a particle is defined by many waves, but not by other particles themselves. There's no direct particle coupling. Similarly, each wave gets any change of its own evolution only due to particles, not to wave-wave coupling. And therefore, any feedback loop in the system where a particle would involve its influence its future motion by recollision processes, that is a process which we know is important in deriving, say, the Boltzmann equation, because there are basically few neighbors to any particle in the Boltzmann limit for a neutral fluid. Well, that phenomenon is hopefully bypassed in this picture, where a particle can influence itself only as much as the other particles influence it. So there will be an overall factor 1 over n in the feedback loops. So hopefully this picture will become very smooth and will give you a good setting to derive Vlasov equation or other mean field equations. Well, indeed, this is not hard. Going from n-body on the left to Vlasov on the right is an elementary matter because the field is Lipschitz, and you get an estimate on the discrepancy between two solutions to the Vlasov equation. You can take weak solutions to incorporate finite n pictures. Then, given an initial discrepancy delta naught of the order, say, 1 over n, you get the discrepancy at time t bounded by initial 1 multiplied by some exponentially growing function, the growth rate being determined by the instability rate corresponding to the worst process which can occur in the dynamics, basically when particles come close to the saddle point associated to some wave. And given total energy of initial data, you can compute an upper bound for this. So this is something very smooth. So how long can you control this discrepancy? If you are allowed to let n go to infinity, just as long as you want. If you're allowed only a finite n, then this bound is not very satisfactory because the characteristic time scale over which the right-hand side will reach some epsilon scales like 1 over gamma times log n minus log epsilon, which is very unpleasant because that really means if you want to ensure accuracy of your computations in the finite n scheme for a long time, you better have astronomically many particles to consider. Okay, am I too pessimistic? Well, maybe not. Because actually, the good news is possibly the dynamics may be chaotic and smooth distribution functions, but that works only in domains where you have exponential mixing of trajectories. The bad news is these domains are localized, and if there is any kind of instability in your system, it's going to be amplified. So let's look at actual numerical simulations. For simplicity, we first consider the case of a single wave interacting with many particles. So you put your particles according to some uniform distribution in space, and a velocity distribution function which may have, say, this shape with positive slope. So you initiate an instability in a system where the wave initially is weak. What happens? Well, there's an instability, and therefore using a logarithmic scale for the ordinate omega b being basically the force root of the wave intensity, well, the exponential regime is well reproduced by a finite n scheme. We used a leapfrog method. And the more particles you put, the closer it comes to what you get from a semi-Lagrangian Vlasov scheme. On a coarse mesh, the Vlasov scheme drifts away, and there seems to be a secondary instability. On a fine mesh, you get saturation of the instability at a level which you easily predict by conservation law arguments. Remember, total momentum is conserved. So if you have particles which exchange momentum with the wave, and that is what happens when you have a positive slope, in the distribution function. When particles get trapped, you trap more faster particles than slower ones, that leads the particles grossly to lose momentum on the average, and the wave can get momentum and build up higher intensity, trap more particles, and so on. And you get, finally, a saturation. And the saturation is oscillatory because at the time where you saturate, your distribution function of particles in XV space is inhomogeneous. Basically, you have a blob of particles somewhere which moves down and up at the bond frequency. But that means the total momentum of particles oscillates, and therefore the total momentum of the wave, that is its intensity, also oscillates. And that's exactly what you see here. Well, the oscillations do not continue forever, at least in the Vlasovian scheme. That's also easily understood because the blob of particles you have here does not remain a blob. Particle rotation in the well is not isosynchronous, and therefore any blob will filament, and when the fine structure of the distribution function becomes smaller than the mesh size, well, your scheme loses it. And that's how you saturate at a constant intensity. And you find essentially this reproduced by the finite end scheme. Yes? Oh, here M is 1. It's a first test. Okay. The M equal 2 problem is rather intricate. I didn't intend to discuss it because we didn't explore it quite completely. I shall switch in a moment from M equal 1 to large M. But M equal 2 or a few involves many regimes. So what actually happens over a long time is seen on the lower part of the picture. For a short time, you stop here, and you seem to have saturated. For a longer time, there's a noisy growth and drift upwards, and you can estimate per level at which it might saturate using equilibrium statistical mechanics arguments and effective ergodicity ideas. This answers a question Livermore was asking last week, which we might discuss later on. Now, what is the process generating this noisy growth? Remember, the wave intensity is an oscillating quantity. Particles get trapped or detrapped. But this process means that when a particle comes close to the saddle point, it may remain untrapped while the other one being trapped separate exponentially. The number of particles being finite, there you have a small-scale instability which can lead to this noisy behavior. The more so because the relevant number of particles is only the number of particles which sit in the area swept by the oscillating separatrix. And typically, you can follow trajectories, find some of them which start regularly, then get trapped, detrapped, retrapped. And the statistics of the trapping process tells you about the noisy growth. So, in this respect, although for n equal 1, we have a proof of convergence of solutions to the finite end problem towards solutions of the Vlasov equation coupled to the wave, In fact, the finite n effects are not to be forgotten over long time scales. And long means a couple of bouncing time scales, which you would like to be your natural time scale in the Larsen limit. That's the first case I wanted to discuss. The second case is what happens not with two waves, but with many waves. That's easier, because when you have many waves, even with two, the question is, what happens to particle? If it's here, trapped in a wave, it will oscillate in it. But if it's here, trapped in a velocity domain common to two waves, then is it trapped upstairs or downstairs? These particles in the domain where the wave resonances overlap are schizophrenic. And it is quite tempting to use first a simple picture with just one particle and many waves, the wave parameters being given by the dispersion relation for omega and k, the wave phases and amplitudes being drawn at random. And if so is the case, then the Newton equation of motion tells you there's a right-hand side here, which is a sum of many Fourier modes. Under reasonable conditions, it may look to the physicist like a white noise, in which case you immediately get that momentum will diffuse, and the diffusion coefficient is proportional to the spectral density of the wave data. Now, how long is this white noise view valid? As long as you can consider Q here as a constant, or at least Q minus Q naught minus P naught, not to change very much. That is, the motion here being basically ballistic. The time scale for that is known as the Dupré time scale, and you can find it out easily. So this very short picture for short time is the so-called quasilinear picture. Looking at what happens to actual particles in a given spectrum is readily made. The quasilinear estimate being just here for delta P square as a function of time. For very strong resonance overlap, there's a good agreement. For non-overlap case, S smaller than half, there are KM barriers in XV space. So obviously the diffusion picture miserably fails. It works for short times, okay. And for moderate overlap, as of the other two, you have chaos, so you expect something to be diffusion-like, but the chaos is a correlated one, and in fact, it enhances transport instead of giving you just pure white noise. So the limit we're interested in now will be the large N strong overlap limit, for which there is good evidence, numerical and I just mentioned analytical work started with the Gibbonisti, which we further completed, that in the large S limit, you do get something very close to a diffusion process. I must say very close because it's not yet a theorem. Now, I would like to end with discussing the initial problem I mentioned, the many-particle, many-wave problem. We had a look at two limits, one particle, many wave, or one wave, many particles. Now, this problem is of interest to the plasma physics community. It has to do with the approach to some equilibria. It is the self-consistent dynamics of many particles with many waves in this large resonance overlap limits. If you start with a distribution function for particles, which has a bump here, inside the range of phase velocities over which you have waves, then the diffusion-like process I described will ultimately lead to the formation of kind of a plateau, and a wave spectrum will emerge, which you can also describe in a moment, as I shall do in a moment. So what actually happens is that the wave parameters here will now evolve. Therefore, the picture I commented upon for large M single particle has to be slightly revised. And of course, the waves will no longer oscillate at their eigenfrequencies, but their complex amplitudes will evolve. And therefore, you have a noisy effect as well here. If you think of the model very coarsely, you would end up with particle transport in momentum, which you describe according to a Fokker Planck equation, with a diffusion coefficient proportional to a coupling constant times the wave intensity spectrum, see, and an additional drift term due to spontaneous emission, goes to zero as n goes to infinity fast enough, but you can have it in an appropriate limit. Whereas for the waves, because of the self-consistent coupling between particles and waves, now you have conservation of momentum. Therefore, if particles get, say, trapped from faster to just the velocity of a given wave, that enhances, because the wave-particle interaction is a resonant one, local in velocity, that enhances the waves in that phase velocity region, which means you end up with a rate equation for the wave. And what is the emission rate for the wave? Well, there's a spontaneous emission due to finite end effects, but there is also induced emission, which is proportional to df over dp, which is the gross weight in the linear picture. So these are the quasi-linear equations which have been in the literature with a derivation in the limit where the wave intensity was small enough so that you had almost ballistic motion. That was the picture I argued about with white noise, or objective with a Dominique Escande is to put these equations on a firm ground in the limit of definitely nonlinear processes. And well, we have pieces of the argument complete. I think the final comment I can make here is that we are heading towards a satisfactory picture of the turbulent evolution of a many degrees of freedom system, where the turbulence is weak in the sense that any physical object in the picture only interacts with many other ones of the other species, and that is a strongly mean field coupling, which hopefully is much better suited to the derivation of a kinetic equation than the few body Boltzmann-like picture. And of course, but you already saw this because it is a Fokker-Planck equation coupled to a rate equation, the outcome will be, or is, a set of dissipative equations with a rate theorem. So I think this is a good summary of what I meant, and I'll be happy to answer more questions. Thank you. No, no. Well, it's not so easy, unfortunately. There are 2 points here. First, in deriving the evolution for the distribution function, I integrate over many particles with the same velocity. So these are reduced equations. I'm no longer in XV space, but basically only in V space. Similarly for waves, I no longer speak of the wave intensity and phase variables, which are the Hamiltonian variables I had from the start, but only of the intensity spectrum. So the phase also disappeared in the picture by an averaging procedure. That's one. And second, it's a bit awkward to speak of diffusion in position, because really, if you have x dot equal p, where p is a Brownian motion, well, x will be a Gaussian process, fine. But its covariance will not grow proportional to time, but proportional to the cube of time, of course. But and incidentally, that also plays a role in the derivation of the equation, because since we had periodic boundary conditions, once the positions have moved far enough, in fact, you have some homogeneity in the new positions, well, some uniformity in space, which makes integrals which seemed a bit hopeless actually rather easy to estimate. So that really helps in getting diffusion in momentum. Does it answer your question?
What is the problem with wave coupling, and how can you assume that
wave coupling? It's a choice for the model. That is, if you start with moderate intensity waves, what governs each wave evolution will be particles possibly resonant with it. That is what you would get if you started from Coulomb interacting particle systems. If your wave intensities are not too huge, you first get, as an effective description of the many-body system, a picture like this one. And wave coupling would involve higher powers in the intensities of the wave. That's a cheap answer, which corresponds to an actual derivation that you can do. Then I have a second answer, which is more teleological. That is, I want to end up with these equations which are considered as a description for weak plasma turbulence, and in which there is no direct wave coupling. So better not put it in the initial evolution equations either. But it really depends on the regime you choose to discuss. Definitely, the day you turn to more complicated Hamiltonians, where you have direct wave coupling, then you're not likely to end up with these quasi-linear equations, but with more complex kinetic wave equations. Well, it's called wave kinetic equations. But if we can't do that, we can hardly expect having good results on the wave kinetic problem with direct wave coupling. In fact, we would meet the same problem we have with Boltzmann. If a wave is coupled to only a few major actors, then all the argument about poor feedback collapses. Does it answer your question?
Okay, thank you.
Well, thank you for your attention.